Are we ready?
Just a little.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
وأهل بيت الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين لا سيما بقية الله العظيم. روحي وروح العالمين العبد الدعاء رب اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي امري واحلل عقدة من لساني يفقهوا قولي. Now I realize this is the middle of Muharram, right? So we renamed the seminar Family Life Seminar. But actually what this is that normally I find there's a lot of encouragement for people to get married. Tell people both hadith, everybody the encouragement to get married. But then after we get married, we don't give people the instructions of the Aqubayt on how to have a successful marriage. Sometimes people end up regretting after they get married. Marriage is so terrible, this is that. So what the thing is that, how can we have a successful marriage? What are the instructions of the Aqubayt for after marriage? Now, the next thing that I want you guys to keep in mind is that the points that I'll be mentioning ayat and hadith, but you should know that some of these points, statistically, across the board, whether in England, America, Canada, the West, East, these are problems all across the world. So if the Ahlul Bayt have made a lot of emphasis on some of these points, we don't want to take it lightly. It's not important to me as a man, so it must not be important to her as a woman, or vice versa. These points are very basic points, and they have to be there from the beginning till the end, which is why I asked that actually people be able to take notes, and then inshallah we have it recorded and saved for others to take advantage of. Now, very quickly, because this is that seminar, after you're married, what are you supposed to do? But because it's recorded, and there's some benefits in just explaining why people should get married. So very quickly, I'll just run over that. Some of these reasons we're going to want to keep with us from the beginning of our married life until the end. Why do we marry? We marry for the sake of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. We marry for Allah's sake. Because Allah does not like to see us single. If we want to be spiritual, we want to better ourselves, we want to be soldiers of the Imam, Allah doesn't like to see us single. Allah wants to see everyone married. We should all be trying for that. At least pushing, then at least it's not our fault. Allah hasn't opened the doors for us, but it's not that I wasn't trying, that I fell into the trap of the Western world. The second one is tranquility and serenity. What we are told is that when you get married, try and make your house a place of comfort and peace, a place of refuge, that both spouses take refuge in one another. You fight your battles on the outside, or for the wife while she's dealing with the children, let's say she's a housewife, or she's working. But then that time that the couples have for one another, that's time of tranquility and peace. It actually increases us in rizq, the opposite of what people might think. No, I'm not going to get married because I don't have enough, or he doesn't have enough, or we're, actually we have hadith that if you get married, it increases you in rizq. Love in Islam is one of the most important things, meaning that it's one of the things that we encourage. The more the couple are in love with one another, the better. And we have some hadith that suggests that as your iman increases, your love for your spouse should increase. I won't read the actual text of the hadith, but we notice in the lives of our great ulama who follow the instructions of the Ahlul Bayt how much attached they are to their spouses. Give you the example of Imam Khomeini, Allah mercy on his soul, and Allah Tabarakallah. So attached to their spouse. In love. More in love at age 80 than they were in the beginning of their marriage. And that's how it should be. It shouldn't be that we tolerate one another. We're just going through this together. You know, it's bad, you know, we might as well. No. Normally, if we're carrying out these instructions, we should be increasing the love. For those of us who are single, it helps to give us maturity. We have in the hadith that gold and silver, I believe it's gold and silver, if I don't make a mistake, are purified by fire. And the believer is purified by bala, and trial. We become more mature people, become better people through going through this process. And the other one, of course, is the spiritual benefits. It's uncomparable. Even a single person can be praying, standing in the night, fasting during the day, and a married person is sleeping, and they're getting more reward. So because our focus this year is about self-building and getting closer to Allah, these things, we want to definitely be doing them. Very quickly now, just because this is, you know, it's important. When we're looking to get married, let's not make a really long list. Normally when I go to different communities, across the board I find the problem with the mu'mineen, there's nobody to marry. Good people, no good people, it's a problem, issue, and stuff like that. What happens is sometimes this comes back to us and our standards, what we say, what we're looking for in marriage. Let's make it real simple, real short list. Most important thing, and this one we're going to need from the beginning until the end, meaning some of these points I'm going to come back to. Looking for somebody to marry, look for someone who has taqwa, who has fear of Allah. I'm not talking about the person, I want them to be making salatul layl, I want them to be on another spiritual level, I want them to elevate me. No. Basic wajibah. That if something is wajib, if Allah says it, this person isn't going to ignore that. So for instance, if a sister is going to get married and the brother sees she's not wearing hijab, she's like, no, hijab is not important to me. That's a big sign. That's a no-no. Because there's going to be other issues in Islam you're going to find that Allah says something. What's going to save the marriage is if both couples submit to Allah. And they say whatever Allah says, then the marriage will be successful. But if for right now, brothers or sisters have their own opinions, yeah, I like this much of Islam, but this is how far I go. You're setting yourself up for trouble. So marry someone who has taqwa. The other thing is that when you get married, expect that there will be a little bit of problems and issues. Let me just tell you right now, those of you who aren't married, that when you get married, it's not always, you know, just, you know, Romeo and Juliet and romance. You know, there will be times you'll be arguing with your spouse, be a little irritated with some of this. Bother me when you do that. So for somebody like me, if I haven't been told that, I'm like, you know, I didn't meet my soulmate. My God, I made a mistake. No, everybody's like that. Everybody goes through that. So don't look to see if that happens, then everything's falling apart. No, it's natural. Normally we put on our best face when we come outside. So you visit a couple, you're like, they're so happy. But you don't know, they know everybody, they're all going through little problems and issues. But why is this taqwa so important? When you go through these issues in the marriage, there are going to be little problems and disputes. You want somebody who fears God. Even if you're not doing what you're supposed to do, they will stop themselves because they have fear of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. It's that basic God. One beautiful story that I really like, they said that there was a man, and he got married to a young lady, and he ended up divorcing the lady. So when he divorced the lady, she was in her waiting period, then one of his friends came over. He's like, what's wrong with her? Divorce, what's the problem? So then the man said that, have you ever heard a man discussing the problems of his wife? She's an Ittah right now, she's my wife. You ever heard a man talking about the problems of his wife? A little shame, yeah. Then he went and he came back later, after she was divorced. Okay, alhamdulillah. So now, she's divorced, she's no longer your wife. Now, tell me, what was her problem and her issue? Then the man turned to him and he said, have you ever heard of a man talking about the wife of another person? Taqwa of Allah. There were problems, issues, but because of Allah, I'm not going to go and talk about this person behind their back, violate their rights, destroy their image. Between me and them, whatever happened, happened. So we want to really look for just a basic taqwa. I'm not looking, I want you to be Hazrat Isa, you should be Maryam. No, not that. Taqwa, fear of God. The other one is pleasant, finding somebody who's pleasant nature. Good akhlaq. After marriage, there are going to be sometimes, there will be little issues. If we marry somebody, a guy or a girl, I married them because they had a really nice financial status. She was really pretty, so I married her for that reason. Normally people who are ill-natured, when they go through difficulties, they get really bad. They were foul mouth already. Then later, and marriage has ups and downs. If you marry for financial status, for instance, or for beauty, these things. So we definitely want to be marrying somebody who has good akhlaq. The other thing that's really important, and this one is difficult sometimes to talk about in the West, is marry somebody who's chaste. I don't mean not fornicating, not going out, obviously, that's obvious, wouldn't do that. I mean even something a little bit further. Normally in the West, we're very friendly, guys and girls. Not in a haram manner, because obviously we're practicing Muslims, but, the idea of, emailing and chatting and talking and, it's just like a sister or a brother to me, sharing feelings. My co-workers at work, we'll sit down, we'll have lunch. It doesn't mean anything. Islamic, it's not a good thing. We're not friends. I don't mean you can't interact in a positive, in a professional manner with people. No, you talk to them, stuff like that. But we hang out together. We just share feelings and thoughts. So many problems happen because of this. We're teasing ourselves. And I'm serious. If there is a brother, and he's like, when I talk to a sister, I don't feel anything. It's just like I'm talking to a guy. Brother, go to a doctor. Matter what? Shouldn't be like that. You're talking the opposite sex? You don't feel any of that? So, chastity. So if you're kind of goes, I hang out with everybody, we're all cool, they're all my sisters. Uh-oh. So let's try and look for chastity. Being careful with our eyes, what we see, movies. A young man, I'm really into, looking. If you know the person, I'm saying that basic couple, but I'm not careful with my eyes, no matter how beautiful my wife is, it's going to be a problem. And also, marry someone, especially for guys now. If you're getting married, marry someone you find physically attractive. If you don't find the person physically attractive, don't get married to that person. Unless really this is an exceptional case, whatever. Be practical about it. And for our sisters, I advise that allow the person to see you before you get married. Sometimes people, either the guys are too ashamed to say that this is important to me, because then I would seem so shallow. So I'm just, I'm only looking for a sister who has iman and taqwa. Brother, you want a sister who you find attractive. You know that. But it's hard to say that to a sister. And the sister's like, no, he wouldn't. Right? No, you can't see me without hijab. That's not happening. Let's follow the fatwa of the marja. And the sisters also, they want to marry somebody who they know finds them attractive. It's important to them also. So let's look for that. The other things we can work on as long as those basic concepts are there. Now I've got some other things about lavish weddings and stuff like that, but we'll see if we have time to get to those things. So back to our original topic, which was the idea of what is it that we're supposed to do after marriage to keep our marriages happy. The first thing is, let's embrace the instructions of the Ahlul Bayt. If there's mental barriers in my mind, certain values that I've accepted, let's get rid of those and submit to the Ahlul Bayt. This is the natural order of the world. Even if it's against the West and what everybody else is saying and the experts, right? Especially I advise this for sisters, because sometimes, we hear about, women's liberation and being a Muslim out there on the go, and I'm supposed to take care of business and I'm going to set the world on fire. And right, so we come into Islam and we're a feminista. Come into Islam as a feminista, and I'm not willing to accept some Islamic laws, or I try and find a legal way of protecting myself from what Islam says. I'll share a hadith, and brothers, you don't listen, right? This is for the sisters. Contrary to what people think, women aren't weak. You have some hadith that explain that a woman, the Prophet says, I've seen no group of people who can rob a man of his intellect like you. And women know this instinctively, that men are simple creatures. They might be big, but they're simple. Women are much more complicated. And if a woman does what she's supposed to do, when she follows these instructions of the Ahlul Bayt, she'll have her husband wrapped around her finger. That's not going to be a problem.
So instead of fighting, no, I'm going to make a condition in my marriage that I do. Instead of doing that, just embrace the natural order, accept that, believe the Ahlul Bayt know what they're talking about, and then see if the Ahlul Bayt aren't carrying out or their promises aren't true. Is my voice ringing in your ears?
He's fixing it up.
He's fixing it up. Okay. So because some sisters believe this, then let's allow our husbands to be strong men and raise our boys to be strong boys. Different than the West, where men aren't men, they're males. They don't raise their children, you know, their girlfriend has babies, my baby's mama. Instead of doing that, let's go and let's have strong men who take care of their responsibilities. And this starts at home. Raise your boys to be boys. Show deference to women. Allow your husband to pay for your meal, to open the door for you when you come to the car, to take care of you, to protect you. Women flourish in the presence of a strong, confident man. But women have the ability, I said that, women are strong. You can browbeat your husband into listening to you, you order him around, you shout at him, but this is bad for both. This is a hadith now, this is from Imam Ali. The man who has a woman run his affairs is cursed. Mal'oon. You have a lot of families that are backwards. The wife is the one ordering, shouting, the kids see dad is, you know, a little weakling, you know, Raymond. Unfortunately. So let's embrace the natural order. And believe me, if you have a strong man, the sister will be much, he'll be. Men are real simple. They'll run through a brick wall for you. Do the things that a woman's supposed to do. Right? Let's not worry about that. I don't have to take the Western approach. I'll take the Islamic approach. Next one, before we get into these issues, is that listening to the instructions of the Ahlul Bayt is not about pointing fingers. That I'll sit and make a list. Yes, my husband is supposed to be like that. My wife must do this. If she doesn't do that, there's this punishment. I'm like, you know, alhamdulillah, thank you for that lecture. Now go home to my wife and just read off the list. You know what Imam Bakr says? What we're doing, this is hadith, now, ayat of Quran, 17:7. In ahsantum, ahsantum li anfusikum. If you do good, you're doing it for your own self. If there are instructions from the Ahlul Bayt, your will to do, to have a happy marriage, when you do that, that's how you're fighting your nafs. That's how you're getting close to Allah. I'm not going to do good until my husband, when he reforms himself, my wife, when she does good, no. Let's start by doing our own duty. We're not here to point fingers. Also, let's not count whatever good we do. We have in the hadith of the Ahlul Bayt that consider whatever good other people do to be great. This is difficult once you get married. Once you get married, it's easy to discount the things the person is doing right and just look at, oh, but I cook, I clean, I work 8 hours, I do this for my family. It's harder for me to look at what that person does. But if I'll do that and I remember all the good that person does, then I'll be happier in my marriage. Much happier in my marriage. So appreciate what they do. Sometimes I advise them, make a list, because people forget after they get married. Make a list of the things that the person is doing right. The next one that I'm going, these are just principles, right? The next one I want to remind you is that enjoying yourself in Islam is worship. This is a hadith of the Ahlul Bayt. This is from Imam Qadr alayhi salatu wasalam. Try to divide your day into 4 parts. 1 part is for whispering to God. 1 part is for your occupation. 1 part is for your brothers and those whom you trust. Those who want what's best for you on the inside, but will also tell you your flaws. And 1 part is for your halal pleasure. Halal pleasure. And with that part, you'll find strength for the other 3 parts. Part of your spiritual program, when you want to, I'm sure some of you want to actually engage in a spiritual program, better yourselves and follow the instructions of the Ahlul Bayt. One of the first steps of the Urafa is to balance out the happiness and pleasure in your life, making sure that you're enjoying life properly. I was talking about the hadith of Unwan Basri the other day. One of the pillars of self-development is your physical well-being, being happy and being balanced and having physical pleasure. Remember I mentioned in the beginning about getting married and how important that is for self-development. If you're not married, then, you know, you can run all day and all night, but it'd be difficult for you to get to the level of a married person. They can sleep, you're fasting. That balance needs to be there from the beginning to the end. So what will happen is that if I think enjoying myself is worship, then some of the hesitation that I might have when I hear these different instructions, the hesitation I have, or the guilt I might feel, for instance, we're going to talk a little bit about the intimate relationship. I might think, oh, that's nasty, you know, let me read Dua Kumail. That's how I'll get closer to Allah. You're married. You're supposed to have an intimate relationship. It's part of your duties. So shaitan attacks believers. It's one of the ways he attacks believers is making them feel guilty for the halal. So we'll just make sure we work on them. The last principle I want to mention is that these things that I'm about to mention for you are a basic set of skills. The needs of your spouse are different from you. Men and women are different. Let's just recognize that. What their basic emotional needs are many times will be different from your basic emotional needs. It's easy for me to trivialize their needs, because when I hear this, I'm like, you know, I don't need that. I don't. To your spouse, I remember I was talking to a brother once, he was watching an action movie. He said, I was so excited when I was watching the movie. He said, in the theater, I felt like standing up and cheering. So happy. Sometimes when your spouse hears these hadith of the Ahlul Bayt, internally, they might feel like standing up and cheering. They're like, you go, Imam Sadiq, tell them how it is. So we don't want to, no, I'll trivialize. It's not important to me, so it must not be important to them. No. Statistically, I said, statistically, Ahlul Bayt, Quran, Hadith. If we want to be happy, we can be, but we're going to have to do these principles. The last one is it's going to have to be consistently done. It's not, you're not going to be able, oh yeah, I did this principle of the Ahlul Bayt in the beginning of my marriage. No, this basic emotional need needs to be met by you for your spouse to the end of their days. They can be 80 years old, that emotional need is still there. So consistency. Making sure we don't, this becomes a habit, you train yourself, and you make yourself a checklist. Am I doing these particular things? Okay, but we can all experience marital bliss if we do these things, inshallah. And Allah helps us, inshallah. We make effort, Allah will help us. Let's start off in the beginning with romance. And we'll call it kindness. This hadith is from Imam Sadiq alayhi salatu wasalam, and he says that Allah has taken a covenant from men. If you want to get married, there's a covenant that Allah takes from you on how to deal with your wife. He says, either you hold her imsakun bima'ruf, either you hold her, you keep your wife with kindness, with honor, with these things, or tasriqun bi'ihsan, you let her go with honor. Either if you're going to keep her, you're going to behave properly, be nice to her, be sweet to her, talk to her. If not, then let her go with kindness. This is a covenant. You don't want to be asked about this on the last day. I didn't obey that covenant. So, the Prophet of Allah says, the best of you is the best of you, or the kindest of you, to his women. And I am the kindest of you to my women. So when we're talking about romance, being sweet, being soft, and being nice, and not so being soft as being a weakling, no. But being sweet to your family, this is an example of the Prophet of Allah. So one thing is sweet talking to your wife. There's a need that your wife has from the beginning of her marriage till the end. This is a hadith. The beauty of a man is in his tongue. Sweet talk to one. What's surprising is you find all men know how to flatter women. All men, instinctively. Put them alone, Eddie Murphy, just talking, chattering. But then when it comes to their families, flattering and talking to her, sweet words, many men save that. You're supposed to be sweet talking to her from the beginning to the end. Make her feel wanted. Flirt, tease, show with your eye. How much you care about the sister. Express love. Some people are stingy with love. Stingy with love. Maybe one bad example. There's a hadith that says, if a man tells his wife that he loves her, this will never leave her heart. Maybe you just want to let her participate. Can she understand, brother? Is that what she did?
It's No, if you already want.
Well, it's good, isn't it? Because you keep running back and forth, it's difficult for you. Yeah. So.
Mention my name on camera. Thanks.
Huh? It's okay, man. We're all one family here. Yeah. All right. So express your love, right? There's some people who are stingy with love. There's a hadith that says if a man tells his wife he loves her, it never leaves her heart. So somebody like me, when I hear that hadith, tell my wife at the beginning of the marriage, you know, honey, come in here. I love you. It'll be enough, inshallah, until the day of judgment. You're never going to leave your heart. It's a mistake. But the scholars say in the hadith, if you love someone, inform them. Express that love. Tell them you love. Tell them how much you appreciate. The person needs that. The hadith, we understand from some of the hadith, it gives a person security in the relationship. Emotional security. Many women, even years later in their marriage, still aren't sure deep down if their husband really, really loves them for them. Still feel a little bit nervous. We can eradicate that by expressing love, telling our wife how much we love her, we appreciate her, figuring out those different things. I love how you cook. I love how you, I love this. Some reason to say it. So always say it. So instead of being stingy, find different ways of expressing your love. A little card. This is one mistake guys make. I mentioned this before, but I'll mention it again. Sometimes guys think how guys think. So, for instance, if you were to get me a 4x4 truck, I would remember you to the end of my days. Now, if I make Salatu Layla, like that brother, he bought me a 4x4 truck. Big gift. Whereas, so men take the same principle for their wives. They go and they get married and they work for 20 years and then they buy her a house. For some women, that's one gift. They've done studies. They said that if you were to give 6 roses all at one time, then that would be, we get 1 point for that. If you give 6 roses over 6 days, you get 6 points. So, gives more than one gift, gifts at different times, every opportunity that we have, you know, and don't get expensive gifts, just little tokens of love. Token of love. So we'll go over and we'll get it. So, tell your wife those sweet things. You're my rock. You're the best thing in my life. You know, you're the greatness. Flattery of the hadith, right? One of the hadith, they say that the best thing that a man can get after Islam itself is a Muslim wife. Who pleases him when he looks at her, obeys him when he commands her, and protects herself and his for chastity and his property when he's absent. So tell your wife, you're the best thing in my life. I think, well, it's not shirk, right, to say these. But, so, we'll remember now that the same way that we want our wives to pursue us physically, we want them to want us physically, they want to be pursued and flirted with, to make them feel that they're being chosen all over again. One thing that I would advise for our sisters, though, is that if your husband does get you a gift, make your husband feel like a hero. Tell him you're my hero. Don't feel like, you know, you get a gift and, oh, wow, thanks. Let me give you a secret. If you really want to hurt your husband, you really want to just break him down, one of the coolest things you can do to him is to never be happy. Never be happy. Whatever he does. Whereas if you will make him feel appreciated, sisters don't know what it's like to be praised by a woman. A woman who's admiring you, really heartfelt admiration, I appreciate. King, it's dangerous for a woman to be admiring of a man who's not his wife. It's that important. Right? So if a wife is like that, how happy will that man be? You let him know. He gets you a gift, over, give him a hug. That man feel like a champion. One thing now about men and romance. A lot of times when women think about romance and a romantic evening, they think about going out to dinner. Going out and a nice little dinner and stuff like that. But what studies have shown is that sometimes men want to just play with their wives, do something with their wives. Kick back, watch a movie together, go camping together, do something active. Sometimes when men think about romance, it's those kind of things. So we shouldn't only limit it to those kind of things. No. Kick back, and watch a movie together, watch sports, for instance, if he likes it and you're not going to be irritating it. Oh, so what's the basket? No, like you know the sport a little bit, you sit back, you watch it. That's a big thing. So, what a lot of what I advise based on my information, was that recreational activities inside the house and outside the house after marriage on a regular basis. And the other thing for our sisters to remember about romance is that a romantic evening without sex is incomplete. So we had a great romantic evening, and then now, you know, go take care of your business. No, that's not going to work. But if it's sex involved afterwards, then it'll be great memory for that guy. Next, conversation. Let's read the hadith. The hadith says this: beautiful words, and has a lot of thawab for different things that are mentioned. This is by Imam Sajjad. He says one of the things is that it makes you beloved to your family, your wife, and it makes you enter paradise. We have the general instructions of the Ahlul of Quran is this is Surah Baqarah that Allah says in the Quran, "Qulu lin-nasi husna." Say beautiful things, say good things to people. But when it comes to the spouse, there's a lot of reward for them. So a couple of things for us guys. Why is it so important for us to spend time sitting with our wife, talking to her, and then paying attention to her? We have hadith of the Ahlul Bayt that says that if a man sits with his wife, he gets more reward than if he does i'tikaf in Masjid Nabawi. Just for sitting with his wife. Your wife has a need to communicate. She wants to talk to you. So people, when they talk, when women talk, they connect, they feel closer, they release tension. Now one thing that happens sometimes is that women communicate with details. And for men, sometimes a little bit distracting. So many little itty-bitty details you're trying to figure out. Or sometimes women kind of talk in circles. And that makes it really tough. So a little couple of instructions for us guys, so we're on our game. One of those is that be a good listener. Be mentally and physically there. Pay attention. Don't tune out. You know, you're watching television and listening to her. You're checking your email and listening to her. Prophet of Allah, he said, when he came to talk to him, he would turn to you and he would talk to you. So that moment in time, you're important. He was a very good listener. Imam Khomeini was like that. No matter what story you're telling Imam Khomeini, it would always be like it was the first time he had heard it. Listening intently. Imam Khomeini is a genius, right? As soon as you say it, he knows what you're talking about. But no, you sit and you just listen, right? One thing that happens sometimes, a mistake that happens sometimes to us guys, once we get into the mood of actually spending time with our wives and talking to our wives, we start talking. Sometimes the wife doesn't really want, so the guy will start having Castro-style lectures, you know, hours. Just, she kind of wants you to just sit back and like listen to what she has to say more. Yeah, participate, be there, you know, but not just sitting and giving your own information. So actually listen. The other thing that happens is that sometimes as guys, if we're presented with a problem, we offer solutions. Sometimes sisters aren't looking for solutions. They just feel better just to talk and get it off their chest. So instead of interrupting and adding our own points and stuff like that, no. Sometimes she's not looking for solutions. She just wants to be to talk. If you can't talk right now, then let your wife know. Right now I'm busy, I'm sorry, I'm not going to be able to have this conversation. We'll reschedule later on in the evening, I will. Instead of either denying her that request or not talking. Women need that. So set a time. Now for our sisters, if we're communicating with men, let's set a time for them. If we tell our husband, I want to talk, he's like, okay, how long? It just comes to his mind. This is hours, it's never going to end, and we just going around circles, and it's kind of tough, right? But if you tell him, 15 minutes, sit, set a time. For this period of time, we're going to talk, so setting a time is good. For our sisters, don't wait for the man to read between the lines. Men aren't real subtle. Tell them, this, like with if you're talking to another girl, then as soon as you make a statement and you look a certain way, then she'll pick up that, oh, wow, you're really upset. The guy, what happened? Oh, nothing. Oh, okay. Alhamdulillah. Turn on television. Yeah. Not nothing. He's not going to. So don't expect it. Say what you mean. And kind of be direct if you can. I remember once this happened, there was a Muslim sister. So she was talking to her husband. So she told him she was about to leave the house. But she was like, are you going out to this particular area? He said, yes, I was standing right there. He said, yes. He said, are you gonna go past this area at that time? He said, yes. Are you gonna be in this part of the neighborhood at that time? Yeah. Then can you pick up this thing? We left the house. The guy was so angry. I hate it when she just tell me I want oatmeal. I'll pick it up. instead of being this straightforward, this is the thing, straight. Guys, appreciate that. If you're going to ask, ask in a loving manner and take what he says at face value. He's not real complicated either. Sometimes you can see that he's upset. Do you want to talk? No? Okay. For guys, I usually tell them, though, if you are upset and you don't want to talk, tell your wife, I'm not upset at you. I don't really want to talk. Let me think about it. Because guys, they solve problems differently. They don't feel a lot of times they have to talk the problem out. Just think about it, have an internal conversation, and then they'll feel better. So sometimes the wife will think, well, if I was upset, I would want to talk. So you're upset, so you must want to talk. Talk! Like, I don't want to talk. The other thing to remember is to reward him for that. Men are more physical than women. They did a test once on these small boys and girls. Right? What they did was they set up a barrier, and they would have the kids' moms on the other side, right, and block the kids from getting to their parents. So the little girls, they couldn't get to their moms, so they would start to cry and make noise and shout to get attention. But the little guys were trying to either break the barrier down or run around the barrier, right? They're a little bit more physical. So if we remember that when we're communicating, then it doesn't always have to be verbal. Be loving, hug, kiss, these kind of things, in this way. So that's another thing now for our sisters. The next one is the issue of respect. Respect. We have in the hadith that whoever takes a woman as a wife, he must honor her. Respect. Sometimes you'll find after marriage, people don't honor their wives. They don't respect their wife in front of the children. I'll have an argument in front of the children and tell mommy off. Where's the instruction? Or, God forbid, heard, there's even cases of actually physical abuse. One of the rights of your children is that no one say ugly things to their mother. Do ugly things to their mother. Your son and your daughter, mentioned hadith. Not that in front of me, I saw mom get disrespected. We don't present a united front to the kids. The kids see we're fighting. No, these things are behind closed doors. So if you have a wife, honor. If you're a really humorous person, there's some people, real guys, are real humorous. And then they sort of laugh and tease and make a lot of jokes about their wife. That's, you know, amusement. So I'm real blunt, I say these different things, and that can be really, really hurtful. Really, really hurtful. Mock, make jokes in front of others. Yeah, my wife is like that, you know, we've all been changed. Listen. So we want to be real careful about it. Honoring the wife, not undermining her authority. If we're going to argue with her, then we argue like you're arguing with somebody you have respect for. You might have a disagreement on something, but if you respect the person, you're going to argue in a completely different fashion. Now, this one is really important. So that was about respect of the wife. For men, again, this is one of those basic emotional needs, respecting the husband. For some men, if you don't respect him, he's not going to feel loved. My wife showers me with a physical affection. She hugs and kisses. No, respect. Respect. So, and it's difficult sometimes for women. They find it easy to respect all men other than their husband. I respect the weatherman, I respect the lawyer, the alim, everybody but this numbskull. I can't respect this. Whereas that's a basic emotional need, more important than love for some men. And unfortunately, statistics show that only 1 in 4 men feels appreciated in the house. Basic emotional need isn't met in the house. So, what we need to do for our sisters is to make our man feel like a king in the house. And I'm guaranteeing you, you make him feel like a king in the house, he'll make you his queen. You have that respect for him. So make him feel like he's, you know, a hero, you know, so big and strong, you're everything I need, you hero, thank you, and mean it. Don't say it sarcastically, right? Because men aren't stupid. I said they're simple, but they're not stupid. You don't mean it. But if you really admire him, I admire you for going and working late hours to provide for me and the family and the kids. I'm proud of you for what you do. Those words. Okay? So, let me just read a couple of verses of Quran about, well, a verse of Quran about this and a hadith, because it's important. This point is so important. This is Surah 4, and it's verse 34. Men are the managers of women. الرجال قوامون على النساء. Remember we talked about not upsetting the natural order? I'm going to fight back. I do what I want to do. You listen to me. I leave the house when I want to leave. I want to be doing that kind. Men are the managers and the leaders of the household. Because of the advantage Allah has granted some of them over others, and by virtue of spending out of their wealth. So righteous women are obedient. This one's tough. Righteous women are obedient. They listen to their husband. Their husband feels like the king. He's in charge in the house. That's important. So now, but again, women flourish in the presence of a strong and confident man. They'll feel better. Right now, there's another hadith which is a little tough for people to take. This hadith is from Shia and Sunni sources. You probably heard it from me before, and I'm going to say it again. This is one of those keys. Prophet of Allah said that if I were going to command anyone to prostrate before anyone, I would tell a woman to prostrate before her husband. Sajda. Talked about respect. The man is in charge. You're the leader of the household. You make the decision. It's your call. Now, I'm not talking about being a doormat. You speak up, you say, explain your position, but then in the end, this is your decision. You make the decision. You're in charge of the household. We trust you. That's when you're going to see the best come out of your husband. So you're making your husband feel like he's your first priority. He's in charge. We have hadith now. They say there is no intercessor better for a woman with her Lord than the pleasure of her husband. Your husband's happy. We have other hadith where a woman asks Prophet of Allah, she says, who has the most rights over a woman? His husband? Woman? This hadith, woman got angry. This is back in the time of the Prophet. Who has the most rights over her husband? Who has the most rights over him? His father? I don't have the same rights that he has over me? Not one in 100, the Prophet. Whereas if a woman, I'm telling you, men are simple, if you make him feel he's the leader and he's in charge, and again, I'm not saying be a doormat. Stand up for yourself. You say, I'm not happy. If something happens that you're not happy about, but I trust you, what this man won't do for you. So you better feel that. I want to give you one example, one practical example of what this can be like or should be like. This is now in the time of the Prophet of Hazrat Fatima. After the Prophet is down, the first two come to the house of Hazrat and they want to pass salams to him. Little woman, come to her house, you want to pass salam. She is unhappy with him. Amir al-Mu'mineen comes into the house and he says, oh free woman, these people are here, they want to pass salams to you. She wasn't happy with them. But she said, al-baytu, they took wa ana wal-hurratu zawjatu, the house is your house, and the free woman is your wife. And some of the ulama have done research, she said, the free woman is your slave, your kanis. At this time of crisis, people would find it easy to be shouting, she's suffering, she's sick. The house is your house, the free woman is your wife. Do what you feel is best. That's the kind of examples we have. So when we're saying respectful, talking respectfully, there's some women who don't talk. They have respect inside their hearts, but for a man it's not real unless you make it real. So talk respectfully to your husband, in front of the children, in front of others, behind his back, respecting his abilities, right? His opinions. There's some men, they feel that their opinions are appreciated everywhere else. People will pay money to sit and listen and just consult with me. I go to the house, everything I say, the wife is like, no, you're wrong. That doesn't make sense. No, we're not doing that. My opinion is valued everywhere else. I said only one in four men feel appreciated in the house. One in four men. You see how come there's so many divorces and problems and issues? But it works. So unconditional respect, the same way that women want unconditional love, even where they're not being very lovable. Unconditional respect, even when he is not behaving in such a kingly fashion. No, you're still the husband, and you're the man, and you're in charge. So I want to give you another example. This is from the Quran now, of the leader, the role of leadership in Islam. This story is about the Queen of Sheba. That the Queen of Sheba, she gets the letter from Hazrat Sulaiman. This is Surah 27, it's verse 33. She gets the letter from Hazrat Sulaiman. So she asks her soldiers, now that we have this letter, what should we do? How should we respond? And they say that it's your command. We're a strong army. We're a strong army. But it's your command. It's your decision. So that's what we want to do with our husbands. We give him our opinion, we explain the situation, and we tell him, it's your decision. Strong men. We're looking for that. Okay? What we do when we do this is we give our husband the gift of confidence. One thing that sometimes might not be so clear for women is that although men look confident on the outside, you see him, he's just so confident, walking back, has everything together, you might think he's really that confident on the inside. For it's not always the case. As a man, you're the leader, you're in charge. If other men see weakness, if you have to show confidence on the outside. But you need that support. So you can give your husband the gift of confidence by saying you believe in him. I'll give you an example from sports. And I know the brothers might not like this example, but it's okay. The greatest basketball player right now is Kobe Bryant, no matter what you need to say. Okay? So, but if you notice, after Kobe Bryant goes and makes a shot, his teammates will come over and high-five. After you go and make a, because players who are there in the NFL or Major League Sports, when these guys go, they know they're on the stage in front of everybody. They can fail. The other guy knows how, outside you just think, so much confidence, you're Kobe Bryant. You do this all the time. But no, you need that reinforcement. And if you get that from your wife, that support, the man feels like a champion. He can do anything if his family is behind him. If they really believe in him, then we know you can do it. We're behind you. So we're hoping that that comes from the home. One nice example, because as a wife, you can give this gift of confidence to your husband. You can also give it to your boys. If you've got sons, you can give them this gift of confidence, right, by how you speak to them. You can either build them up or you can tear them down. I was reading a story about a guy who he sold over 1 million books later on in life. But this guy, when he was... he had a grandmother who gave him this gift of confidence. His grandmother, a woman, she would talk to him, you're so smart, you're a genius, you're a hero. She really believed it. This guy went to school, and his counselors were looking at his work, they're like, you're qualified for skilled labor. Why don't you go over and dig holes somewhere? I mean, you were not, right? But he was this wildly confident because his grandmother believed in him. He went to get his degree, his PhD, studied millions of books, right? And that gift of confidence. So the sisters can give that gift of confidence to their husbands. One important way that you do this, though, is when you want him in the bedroom. If you're not like that, that damages confidence. If you are willing and happy, that helps build up that confidence. One thing now about, we'll do this one, inshallah, and we'll take a break, everybody, break for a couple of minutes, and after that, come back. One of the basic emotional needs of women is that they feel that they want their husband to take an active role in raising the children. There's some men who have a habit of dumping it all on the wife. I provide the money, I come home, but I don't take a role in raising my children. That's not, except maybe for the occasional spanking or something like that, but imparting values, spending time with them, talking to them. And women have a basic emotional need for that. They can't turn over all the parenting to the mother. The moral and educational development of the children, that's part of your responsibility. As we all know, children are easier to influence before they become teenagers. Which means investing in our children at a young age. Normally, what happens when people are really popular, like these big CEOs, people with deep greatness and stuff like that, towards the end of their lives, they realize that I missed out on something in life. I didn't invest in my relationships.
people were most important to me. I went out outside the world, I achieved, that was great, this and that. But I didn't spend time with those people who were closest to me. So we're talking about spending time from the time the children are little. You heard the example of the Prophet of Allah, not only with his own children, even other people's children. They said the Prophet of Allah was going to the masjid and some children saw the Prophet of Allah. They said, come, we want you to be our camel. Regular children. The Prophet of Allah was there being their camel, they're riding the Prophet of Allah. The believers realize the salat's getting late. Salman comes out, he sees the Prophet of Allah, he's a camel for some children. You know, please release the Prophet of Allah, we need to make salat jama'ah. The Prophet of Allah said, no, you have to buy me from the kids, don't just disrespect the kid. He went over and got some walnuts, and he bought the Prophet of Allah for some walnuts from the children. Or you've heard the story of Amir al-Mu'mineen when he goes to the widow, right? And he says, should I be helping you cook the food or play with the children? That's what, with other people's children. Let alone playing with your own children from the time they're very young. One thing I would keep in mind is that normally when we want to raise children, being consistent is very important. Children can see when you're not consistent. A lot of times the reason we can't, our children don't break their habits is because we as parents aren't consistent in how we deal with them. One time you do this and I get very, very angry and I start shouting, and the next time when I'm happy, nothing happens. The kid realizes it's not about the principle, it's whether daddy's angry or not. Whereas if we're consistent, then this will help. Leading by example, remember I talked about taqwa? We want our children to be righteous and pious and these things. Then practicing Islam in front of the children, when the children see daddy misses salah, he's over there, you know, I want my, how come my children are doing, I'm doing all sorts of haram in my own life. So we need to do that. One thing that I found is useful is that when it comes, there's times as a parent, especially if you're a man, where you've got to tell your children no. Can I do this? No. Disciplining the children. Now the children start to say, why? Right? Why can't I do this? Daddy, I say, why? So what happens is that for me as a man, it's easy to use my power and to shout. Because I said so, that's why. But what's nicer is to use that time to communicate your values. Muslims. Muslims don't do this. In Islam, for the first 7 years you're free, then after that, you're supposed to listen to me. We're Muslims. Islam says that. Next 7 years after this, then another stage. So use those times when we say no, when we discipline the children to try and communicate our values. If we can, try and have meals together. I know we're really busy, we're living in the West. Right? But Ayatollah Khamenei used to advise government ministers. He says, if you can go home and have lunch with your family, then do it. If you can. So some of us, okay, we can't do that. We can have dinner together. Instead of having a separate time, I come home and I pop my food in the microwave, I watch a little TV. I don't know, spend that time with the wife and kids and sitting together. I found one thing that's useful is if we have more than one child, to have one-on-one times for the different children. Sometimes you have, like I have three, right? So if you have more than one child, instead of just lumping everybody together, take time out for the individuals. Me and you were going to go to the store. Me and you were going to go outside. As a parent, as a father, sitting down and talking with them. Have family meetings. So get everybody together. These are the instructions. This is the plan. This is what we're doing. We've done this so far. We haven't done this. Family meetings. Controlling our anger before we discipline. Yeah. A lot of times as a father, you have the actual role of disciplining. And you have to show anger. Right? You're responding to a bad action. But internally, I might be shouting because I'm supposed to be showing anger. But internally, should I be angry? Sometimes if I'm angry, I can lose control. And now they say, control your anger before you discipline. Control your anger. You might show that anger. You might discipline. You might spank, whatever. But I'm not physically, I'm almost out of control. I'm outraged. Control. And the other one is to be affectionate and show love, express love with the children. Make the children feel important. You know, Shahid Beheshti, he was Ayatollah. He was a PhD, speak, I don't know, maybe seven languages, so many heavy responsibilities in the Islamic Republic. But his children were really important. Sometimes they would call Shahid Beheshti at his home. They're like, Shahid Beheshti, can we talk to you? And he'd be like, right now I'm doing my children's homework. Wa alaykum as-salam. Children are actually important. So let's see if we can do that to our children. Okay, let's take a break now, inshallah, for 5 minutes. We may not wear you guys out, and then we'll move on, inshallah.
Allah.
Allah. Allah. Allah. Allah. Allah. Allah. Allah.